I want to, first of all, we had a great week together, Baruch Hashem, from our Bein Hazmanim. We had a good time. We've been learning nicely. Hopefully soon we'll be back at Beit Medrash. Hopefully Beit Hashem very, very soon. I hope. This week's Parsha is a real, three main characters I want to focus on, or three main characters of our Parsha, which is Yaakov, Esav, and Yitzhak. And their journey to how they became the people that they are, and their reactions, this is probably particularly and mostly focused on the two boys, on the twins, on Yaakov and Esav. It's a very, very startling and sharp contrast. I want to ask this question about each person's character for a second. I'm going to go through each one at a time. We'll start with Esav. So first of all, Esav, number one, we know as the Torah describes, at the beginning of the Parsha has told us. So it describes that there were children that were bursting out of their mom's womb. Right? Yitzchak and Esav bursting out of the womb of Rivka. And if you read that at first glance, it sounds like it's not fair. It's not fair! Right? Yaakov was destined for greatness, and Esav was destined for failure. And right away we have like a sympathy. It's like, imagine you had a parent who raised his kid so poorly, what do you expect them to do in the end? Like, they don't have a choice in the matter. So this is even more than a parent. Kadosh Baruch Hu himself gave them DNA that made one a tzaddik and one a rasha. How can we blame Esav? Even before he had a choice, he was already jumping at the opportunities. Question number one. Moving on in his life, post-birth, we know, we're told, that Vayigluh HaNa'arim, the children grew up, and Esav became Esav, and Yaakov became Yaakov. But if you look in the description of the ages, Vayidalu, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Perek Chav Hei, while they were younger, so you couldn't tell who was who. They were mamish. Again, they didn't look identical. One was very red and one wasn't, but they were identical in character, in behavior. It says, at the age of 13, it says, Kiyam Shinasu B'nei Shloshesrei, Shana, when they became 13 years old, Zeh Piresh B'lati Medrashos, Zeh Piresh L'Avodah Zarah Lilim. One of them separated to the base of Medrash, one separated to the Avodah Zarah. Is that true? At the age of 13, did Esav become a Obed Avodah Zarah? It's not true. He did not. He did it actually at the age of 15. How do we know? Happened at the age of 15. Happened at 15. What's that? How do we know, boys?
The same day he did all the Gilgulos.
What happened that day?
The day that
Avram dies! Excellent, you did your Schneider. Shino Shadow. Maybe not. I don't know. Listen, I don't think
it's not shy.
Okay, not shy. Anyways, the day that Avram died, he was 175 years old. He had Yitzchak when he was 100. Yitzchak had Israel when he was 60. Simple math. At 15 years old, when the boys were 15 years old, when Avram died. And that was the age. Why was Avram killed? Taken from the world, by the way, 5 years prematurely. You know why? So he wouldn't see Esav become Esav. What do you mean? At 13, we just said Esav became Esav. What happened those 2 years in the middle? Was he an Oed Avodah Zarah at the time? Because if he was, Avram should have died at 173, not 175. Something seems off with the numbers. Okay, moving on. Esav is given, we know this famous interchange between Esav and Yaakov, and Esav asks for the lentil soup. They have a discussion about it, right? He said, I'm dying. He says, give me your bechorah, give me your rights to the firstborn. He says, what do I need that for? But die anyways, I might as well give you the rights to the firstborn. Right? Why do I need a bechorah? You might as well take it. I'd rather live. And he said, promise me, and he promised him. And the Torah describes, I'll read to you inside the words. It says, Vayochal, Vayesht, Vayakum, Vayelach, Pasuk Lamadal, Perichav Hei, that Esav eats and he drinks, he gets up and he leaves, and then it says, Vayivez, Esav is a Bechor. Esav disgraced the birthright. He disgraced it now? What does it mean? The biggest disgrace was when he shook on the deal in the first place. That you would agree to give up a place to be like the priest, the birthright. Back in the day, the Bechor was like the priest, like the Kohen, it should have been. He was the one who was the closest servant to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. You gave up the rights of the birthright for lentil soup? That's when the embarrassing thing happened. That's when the vayivez, the bizayon, the scorning and the embarrassment, the disgrace of the birthright is when you shook on it. Not when you left afterwards. Why would the Torah describe it when he left? Four. At the end, when Esav is swindled and tricked out of the bracha and Yaakov steals the bracha, Esav mamish cried out at Zakagdala. What is he so upset about? It's not that frum. It's not so frum. The brothers of Yitzhak, he believes in those things? What's he so upset about? He rejected God, which means he rejected what Yitzhak was. The idea that a bracha should matter would only make sense if you believe in a God, not if you're stomped like a Russia. So what's the pshat with that? Why was he upset? Yaakov. So Yaakov is a very, to me, he seems so innocent until you read the parsha. And he's like, good. He's good. He's good at this game, right? Anochi! Esav b'chorecha. Right? It's me. It's me. And Esav's your firstborn. Yaakov says, who are you? You know, Anochi, I am I. And Esav is your firstborn. Yaakov is each time Yosheva Alim. He seems to slip into that job pretty well. And give me a break. Like, really? We're going to suggest that's what was meant? We're going to give him credit for not fully lying at that point in time? Maybe you're allowed to lie. I'll never forget when I was in Silver Spring, actually, listening to a drusha of the Rabbi Maishul when I was growing up. Actually, I was already post-Israel, so I was already a little more firm and inspired to listen to the drusha. I was very bothered by what the rabbi said in the drusha. He was going through all these, like, one-liners, like, you know, first one in, last one out. So really, Yaakov was the first one in, because he was the second one born, he was the first one in, he was the Bechor, that's why he took it. All these, that's Rashi quotes Epshat. And that's okay, we're trying to figure out a way that Yaakov could be given the firstborn, and could say the words, Anochi, I am I, and Esav is your firstborn. And the rabbi just dismissed all those trust, and he quoted some lady, who was a more modern-day lady, of a trust, he liked what she had to say. Meaning, Rashi, eh. Right, Gemara, this shot, eh. This lady made it sense the way she said it over. But the point the rabbi was bothered by is it's a good point. We're gonna buy that line. We're gonna give Esav some credit, Yaakov some credit that he really didn't lie. Anochi, comma, Esav b'charecha. If you were in the room, you would have thought he was saying, "I am Esav, your firstborn." That's what everyone would think. It's like, why are we even playing the game here? You're allowed to lie for it. You're allowed to lie. That's what I said to the rabbi afterwards. What do you mean? Someone comes, imagine the Holocaust, Nazi Germany. Someone knocks on your door. Is anyone in here? You know, then they find you. God forbid. Anyone else in here? I can't lie. Yeah, they're hiding underneath. No one else is in here. Just me. You lied. Yeah, you lied to protect. So Yitzhak was holding onto his hand a possibility of a bracha that we believe as Jews had tremendous weight attached to it. So yeah, Yaakov lied. He is allowed to lie about it. It's like being in the Holocaust. He's lying to protect. He's lying to secure the holy bracha to be part of the Jewish people, not part of Esav. You're allowed to lie sometimes. That's allowed to lie. Why are we so fixated? I was like, well, he didn't really lie. Anochi, kama, Esav b'chorecha. Why don't we just say, you know, he did lie. And you should lie for that. And you would lie also for that. He's supposed to lie for that. Why are we hedging? Well, Yaakov, why are we doing that for Yaakov? And finally, Yitzhak. Two questions I have for Yitzhak. Question number one. How was he so badly duped? He didn't know Esav was a Russia. He thought Esav was a tzaddik. Can we say tzayid b'fiv? Which Rashi explains in the Medrash Gemara describes it. Esav was so good. He was a smooth talker. He trapped with his mouth. He was a smooth talker. That he would ask his father questions on Shumos and Maestros and as if he kept everything. Was Yitzhak so out to lunch? Yitzhak? Rivka, by the way, knew what was going on. She knew her children. She hatched the plan to steal the bracha. Did she not communicate with Yitzhak how the children were doing? Didn't they have chinuch together as a husband and wife? Where was the communication? Where was this level of like understanding that your son, by the way, is a monster? Be aware of that. No one called him out at parenting conferences? Nothing? How is he so lost in this? And finally, one more question about Yitzhak. Yitzhak realizes on the spot when he realizes finally that Esav was tricked. But here he is, imagine. Simply robbery at its finest. And all of a sudden he realizes, oh my gosh, the guy in the bracha last time I thought was Esav. A kol kol Yaakov was happy to Esav, and I gave him a bracha. And now it comes over here. And his brother Esav comes. And he says, I understand. He says, Mieta, when he realizes, what's it, who are you? Ani bincha b'chorcha Esav, I'm Esav, that's who I am. Ve'echarad Yitzhak karadag la be'od. Yitzhak starts to tremble. And he gets really nervous. He says, Mi'efo hu'atzad tzayir ve'yavei li ve'ochal mikol The one who came earlier who tricked me, he should be blessed as well. And then Esav comes and says, my brother, he came instead of me, what do you mean? Bless me instead. And his father said, I'm sorry. Your brother tricked me. He got your bracha in the end. Listen, I know he was surprised, Yitzhak, and there's a whole thing where he was duped a little bit on this topic, but like, shouldn't he try to protect at this point in time? Shouldn't he figure out a way not to be like, tough luck. He got you. He beat you. If it was me, I would imagine I'd be trying to like hedge. Oh, it's okay. You know, I had something for you. By the way, in the end, he gives him a bracha after he begs for it. He gives him a bracha. So he just says whatever you want to say. Mumble something under your breath. You still give me five for Menashe. You wouldn't like it, of course. But it's like, say something. Try to cover the rivalry. Why is he being so blatantly pointing out, sorry, you lost it. Protect. Because you know that they're going to come afterwards, as we know what happens, they're going to be this rivalry. The more that you focus on it, the worse it's going to be later on. A lot of questions we just asked. Esau's character, how did this whole thing happen? Well, he's so tricked. Okay. So I want to start with the first question we asked, the destiny for failure. So Esau was not destined for failure. He was destined for greatness. He had passion. You know who else is called red in Tanakh besides Esav?
David.
David is called red. Red means you have a fire, you have a passion. David Melech, when he had his passion, you know what he saw? He saw Goliath, this Plishti beast of a man, standing in front of all Jewish people and saying for Shmuel. And everyone was cowardly in fear. David said, give me a chance, give me a few stones, I got this. Because he was red. He was a warrior. He was a leader. Now, granted, he couldn't build the base of Mikdash afterwards because he had blood in his hands. But he had the blood of Kedusha on his hands. He wasn't destined for failure, Esav. He was destined for passion. He had tendencies. But tendencies is what you deal with in life when you make decisions. How do I channel my energy the best way possible? A person may have like ADD. Some of you guys may have ADD. ADHD, some of you may even be zocha to have. So much koch you have. You gotta figure out how to channel it. But you have energy. You use it. How do I use it well? Not how do I get distracted? How do I use it well and multitask? Whatever you do with yourself. There is really not a meat in the world that's just bad. You have to learn how to use it better. So don't think he was destined to be bad. So where did he go wrong? What happened in the end then? By the way, Yitzhak wasn't tricked. He knew Esav had tendencies. But he thought Esav would be the warrior one day. David HaMelech, we described, Yaakov was the Ishtam, the sweetie, who would learn the Beis Medrash all day long. Yisachar and Zvulun had the same relationship. It should have been Esav and Yaakov. Yitzhak knew what Esav was like, but he believed more than anything else is that maybe I can get him back on track if I give him these brachas. Right now he's having a hard time. He's you know, he kicked out a few yeshivas, wasn't doing well, hanging out with the wrong crowd, extra activities that aren't good for his mind. If I give him brachas, I can bring him back. He wanted to give him brachas, not because he knew exactly who he was. But he felt that maybe if I give him brachas, I'll be able to bring him back where he should be, which is a partner of Yaakov. What he didn't know was just how far off Esav had gone. And that's where Rivka was a little more astute. And she recognized the challenges that Esav was going through a little more. But Yitzhak wasn't blind, even though he calls him blind. He wasn't blinded to who really Esav was. Yitzhak knew. He wasn't great, but he could use the chizuk. And therefore the brachas were really destined for him. But what happened to Esav? How come he fell off the wagon? How come he didn't take this passionate, ruddy, red, David-like person and become David-like, a warrior? So it was these 2 years, these two missing years we described earlier on. At the age of 13, it says one of them went to the base Medrash and one didn't. He went to the base of Avodah Zarah. But he was not Avodah Zarah. He couldn't have been. Then Avram would have died. It took him 2 years. 2 years of being out of the base Medrash. For 2 years, he wasn't in the game. And your mind just changes. And your thoughts start to change. And now you're open to different things. You don't just one day go from being an identical twin, as far as behavior goes, to Yaakov, to becoming a Russia one day. No, he stopped showing up for shiur. He skipped out in classes. 6'10"? I don't go to that. Chaburas. I'm busy. I'm in the middle of the game right now. I'm not hopping out of there. He stopped showing up. And as time goes on, you start to change your attitude and your mindset. And eventually, if you don't get back in the game, so 2 years later, as he's in these very, you know, impressionable years, he becomes the monster that we know him to be later on. That's what happens at the age of 15 years old. But it started for 2 years of just doing nothing. We happen to be Baruch Hashem Yeshiva right now. We have more than 2 years of our life of really not in the game. And we'll have it later on in life also. What do you do? How do you deal with struggles? How do you deal with failures? How do you deal with not being in a yeshiva setting? So that Asa blew also. What happened? First of all, Asa takes a different attitude now. 2 years later, 15 years old, his grandfather dies, and they're having lentil stew. And he says, you know, I want the stew. He says, you gotta give me your firstborn. And he says the following line. I'm going to die anyways. What do I need this for? And the Chazal say, what does it mean? It means that my job of being a Bechor is wrought with challenge and potential death. A Kohen Gadol, for example. If he would make one mistake when he's Lefnayim Lefnim on Yom Kippur, he would die. Offering the Korbanos and the Kodesh Rosh, he would die. He says, what do I need that for? This firstborn, the right to be the one who serves, don't forget, back in the day, the Bechor is the one who serves. One who serves, I need that on my record. I need to be so careful. Take it. I'm happy for you to take it. You know, what do I need? I'm going to die if I have that. Why would I need a bechor for? Take it. Ruchem Lubavitz explains, this was his major downfall. Because what it did is it said, the attitude he had is, I don't want a risk, even if it's a high reward. In life, we are trained risk-reward. When you get to the top of any profession that you have, there's a higher risk and a higher reward. If a Super Bowl kicker, a field goal kicker. So if he's right now playing an exhibition game versus kicking the ball for his team at the last second, Adam Vinatieri, last second for his team, high risk, high reward. You're in the business for this moment. You want the ball in your hands at the end of a game. High risk, high reward. But anything that's valuable, okay, that's what I'm here for. That's what I want. I want the risk because I believe in myself enough. I'll get the reward also. But Esav says, what do I need this for? He was out of the practice. He was out of the game. I don't need to have this. The muscle Rav Levaz brings down is, do we ever look at a sus, at an animal, and say, gosh, I wish. Wish it could be me. It's got nothing to worry about. He just walks around all day long. He grazes in the field. Takes people on rides sometimes. This guy, he's not made. Look in the mirror, look at me. Ugh. I can't believe I was created as a human. What a bummer. No one thinks that way. Why not? Because you appreciate that you were given things that demand from you something. I'd rather be me. I'd rather be human. I'd have decisions that I make right or wrong. It's a decision that I'm going to make right now. I want the risk. Because I want the reward. I don't want to be an animal. That's not an attitude that we believe in. We don't take that approach. We don't take that position at all. But Esav, at this point in time, says, what do I need it for? Risk, reward, I could die with this? Take it off my hands. I'm happy for you to take it. Now, he did this all under a state of duress. He was starving at the time. I want to share with you, I think that what he did wrong, how did he disgrace the birthright for real? Not the bad choice he made at that moment in time. He ate and he drank. He was famished beforehand. And now he's full. Shouldn't he for a second have said, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Let that go? He could have stopped himself. Not that Yaakov would have taken it back. He wouldn't have reneged on it, maybe. But at least, at this point in time, if Asa would say, oh my gosh, you know, trade back. That's not a busha, it's not a bizayon. Because he made a mistake out of duress. He was starving. Or so he thought. But in the end, after the mistake was made, he ate and he drank. He's not hungry anymore. He gets up and he leaves. He goes on his way. That's the bizayon for the Bechorah. Because there are times in life when we are in a situation where we feel a yetzer hara urge. And we might even fail. But 9 out of 10 times we feel afterwards, I blew that one. I made a terrible mistake just now. I'm going to fix that for next time. Because we were a crime of passion. We made a terrible mistake. But Esav has a crime of passion. He's starving. And then he's not passionate anymore because he ate and he drank. And he just walked out without even saying anything like, can we take that back, please? That's the greatest bizarre. That's where it all went wrong. Yaakov is the opposite. He's the sweetest, most innocent kid. Chazal described that when he went to get the animal to Shech, to breathe life to his mother, to get ready, prepare the meat, prepare the food, he was crying the whole way through. It says he was like set with his head over, bawling. I can't believe this is me. This is not me. I don't want this to become me. And when he lied, he couldn't lie. He had to say in a way where I could feel there's at least a little bit of truth in it. Anochi, kama. Esa Bicharecha, I can't say words that are fully alike. And this is also not true. But I will not let myself go. I will not pretend that this doesn't bother me. It bothers me, and I will say whatever I have to say, but I do it kicking and screaming. It's not okay. I'm not comfortable with this right now. Both Esav and Yaakov confronted a moment in time that was painful. And one of them gave up, and one of them persevered. Yitzchak, you know what he says to Esav? He says, he got you twice. You know why he said it to him? Because he wants to give him a second chance to be disappointed. Because maybe the second time you can learn how to react better. And in the end, he says the same thing later. He says in the pasuk that he wanted to kill his brother after it was over. He wanted to kill him. But Yitzchak rubbed it in because you should know the mistake you made is after you had something you don't want to do, after you had a fail, how do you pick yourself up from the ground afterwards? Which explains this beautiful medrash that Chazal bring down, which I'll quote right now and then I'll end up. It says that Vayarech Hizrech Begadav, that Yitzchak smells the clothing that he was wearing on his garment, that Yaakov was wearing. And says Rashi, quotes the Medrash, Reach Bogdav. He smelled the scent of the traitors of Yaakov. What do you mean the traitors? It tells over two stories of people who came from Chashav families, one of them. Two Jews who were mamish rejectors of God. One was called Yaakov Ishtraros, and Yochanan Shasisa, I think, something like that. I forget his name off the top of my head. Listen to the story told to each one of them. It's such a strange moment for that in the story. It's such an out-of-place story. Here he is, he's getting the brachas, and he smells these Reach Bogdav. Yosef Meshisa, and Yaakov Ishtoros. I think those are the two names. One of them was a person who rejected God, and when the basement was being destroyed, so the destroyer said that we need someone. The Romans said we need someone to go in and to we want to see what happens when you go into the basement. Mikdash, what happens to you, so we can make sure that we are going to be okay when we go in and take everything out for ourselves. So one of these guys said, yeah, I'll do it. And he came out and he takes the menorah. Sorry, he said that whatever you take is yours. Takes the menorah, this golden menorah, beautiful menorah. They say to him, whoa, that? Even we wouldn't take that. That's like holy. I wouldn't touch that one. He says to himself, oh my gosh, I've sunk so low that I took out, as a Jew, one of Yaakov's descendants later on. I took out something that even the enemies of the Jewish people wouldn't take out. I have sunk so low. So he said to him, you know what? Put it back and take something else. But no, you can take something else. He goes, no. He goes, I can't believe I just did that just now. I'm done. And they threatened him and they killed him. They killed him. He didn't care. He says, woe is to me that I angered my God like that. That's what Yitzchak sees right now at this moment in time. The second story, very similar. There was a nephew and an uncle. The uncle was a chashav rav. The nephew was this rejecter of Judaism. And the uncle was teaching Torah and taken out to be killed on a horse in Shabbos. And the nephew was not sure where Shabbos is also on a horse. He sees his uncle. He says, oh, look at us. So much in common, you and I. We're both riding horses on Shabbos. See? We're closer than we thought after all. Making fun of his uncle who's being killed. Uncle says to him, you know, if this is, you're able to say that such things, and again, we get with this world to get away with so much, imagine the reward I have coming my way. He says, the reward you have coming your way, you're about to be killed, about to be slaughtered, about to be murdered. He says, whoa, imagine that. If that happens to me, who cares about God, what's going to happen to you one day who couldn't care less about God? And with that, this man was like shaken. And it describes that he actually put four pieces of basin on himself. He killed himself. Because he couldn't believe he'd sunk so low. That's what Yitzhak sees in his vision as he's giving a bracha. He smells the begodav, the clothing, the traitors of Yaakov. What's the kesher? That's exactly the kesher. Yitzhak sees that when Jewish people make mistakes, they come back. When Yaakov had to do what he had to do, he fought with every ounce of his being to say, Anochi, Esav Yichra. He cried the whole way through. Esav, when he had to do what he had to do, he didn't care about it at the end. The way you react to struggle, to frustration, to failure, is what sets us aside. That's how you become a great person. Because everybody in the world is going to fail. But if you embrace your failure and you don't care about it, then you'll be a failure and no one ever remember you afterwards. But when you fail, not if, but when you fail, and you demand from yourself, I will not take that. I will fight my way through that. When I have to do things that aren't in my best interest, and I fight my way through, and I cry the whole process through. And Yitzhak recognized that's what a Jew is like. You have inside you the ability to never, ever allow failure to be your reality. It says, Sheva Yipol Tzadik Bekam. The Tzadik falls seven times, gets up. Chazal say, Rav Chaim Friedman says, that no, that's what makes you a Tzadik. That you got up when you fell made you the Tzadik in the end. We learn here in this parsha, and with this point, is a parsha of development and growth. Two people born together in the same womb, identical, and things start to change. And what caused the change is how did they react to their struggles? One of them embraced it and loved it, and that was Esav. And he gave up everything. They gave it up. They were happy to struggle. I'd rather be a sus. I'd rather be a donkey. I don't need to risk reward. Just give me nothing. And one of them says, I demand for myself greatness. And as life went on, even his descendants, and that's what Yitzhak smelled, his descendants later on, generations later on, would never give in. Even when they made the biggest mistakes, they would never stop trying their hardest. We should never fail in our lives. But when it happens, and it will definitely happen at some point in time, remember who you really are. Are you a Yaakov or are you an Esav? Do you want to be the animal? Or do you want to be a person? A person who has risk and reward. Hopefully we should be Zocha to not fail. And when we do fail, because it will happen, we should realize, how do I pick myself up from this mess? Because I'm supposed to become in the end. Have a great Shabbos.